This is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast, where we fight for lower taxes, less waste, more accountable government. I'm the federal director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, holding down the fort here in Ottawa. My name is Franco Terrazano, and I'm joined by my friends and colleagues, our Alberta director out there, Chris Sims, and our Prairie director, Gage. Gager, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Franco. How about you?
Well, I'm doing good. Now, we brought in some of the economic strongman that is Gage, because we're going to do a big deep dive on carbon taxes. Then we're going to do a big deep dive on the newest plan for the government to soak you and take more of your money to give to the state broadcaster. But before we do that, folks, let me just set the stage here, okay? Because we are going to do a deep dive on carbon taxes. And what we all have to remember here is that when Trudeau brought in his carbon tax, he really brought in two different forms of carbon taxes, but it's in the exact same package that is his carbon tax suite. Okay, so listen to this, folks. When he brought in his carbon tax, he brought in what is called a consumer carbon tax and a hidden industrial carbon tax. I feel like you probably already know the consumer carbon tax, right? That is the tax that directly increases the price every time you go to the gas station, right? That is the carbon tax you see on your home heating bill, on your natural gas bill, for example, okay? That's the consumer carbon tax. And the media has been doing a lot of focus on that consumer carbon tax while not talking very much about, just as a costly type of carbon tax, Trudeau's industrial carbon tax. Now, it's similar in that it's a carbon tax and it applies on larger businesses. So think fertilizer plants, think steel companies, think oil and gas companies or energy companies, right? They pay this industrial carbon tax. And of course, those costs are then passed down to you. Okay, so when we say scrap the carbon tax, we don't mean just get rid of one part of the carbon tax, not just get rid of the consumer carbon tax. We need all of the carbon taxes gone, including the industrial carbon tax. Now, Simmer, let's bring you in and explain to everyone why we have to get rid of the industrial carbon tax and just how damaging this sneaky hidden carbon tax is.
For sure. So I think former Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland kind of let it slip when she described the consumer carbon tax as the consumer facing carbon tax. That makes it real obvious that these politicians are just talking about the carbon taxes that we can obviously see. To your point exactly, Franco, it shows up on some people's power bills because your power is generated by natural gas, and it shows up on most people's heating bills. And if you're standing there at the fuel pump, you can do the math on price per liter of gasoline, price per liter of diesel. What Carney wants to do is to delete that consumer-facing carbon tax and stuff that cost into the industrial carbon tax. To your point, this is how this works. If the government, led by Prime Minister Mark Carney, increases the industrial carbon tax on things like a fuel refinery, so guess what? Your gasoline and your diesel that the refinery makes is going to cost you more because of that carbon tax. Same thing goes for a power company that is using natural gas to generate electricity for people. That company will not eat the cost of that carbon tax. It will absolutely pass it on down the line to you and me and your mom, the consumers. Same thing goes, and I'm treading on Gage's territory here, when it comes to farming. If the government slaps a fertilizer plant with a big industrial carbon tax, remember, he said big businesses, that's a big business, that increases the cost of the fertilizer, which increases the cost to the farmer, which increases the cost to the rest of us. The sneaky part here is that you just can't see it.
Yeah, let me bring in Gage for a second here, because I think it's pretty obvious in a sense of how if a government imposes a carbon tax, no matter what they call it or how they try to hide it, on businesses, obviously it's going to be consumers who end up paying the price of that carbon tax at the end of the day. Now, Gage, I want to bring you in here for a second because I want to talk about the international economic angle here, right? We've heard Trump many times say he wants to, you know, make America's economy great again. He wants to encourage more manufacturing down there. And at the same time, we have these tariffs hanging over our head in our economy. So, Gage, can you just kind of lay the framework of how an industrial carbon tax would be so damaging for our economy, especially given this international context?
No, exactly right. Because we're definitely talking about the important costs that consumers are going to face when they're paying these downstream costs, the industrial carbon tax. But one of the most bigger costs that's going to be on this international context is that economic cost. Because if we go back to that fertilizer plant again, if they're simply paying too much in this industrial carbon tax under Carney, they need to emit more. So they're paying all these costs. It's making it very more expensive for them to run their business. What that business can then do is just go south and set up shop in the United States, so they're not paying a national carbon tax. They keep their costs low, and then they can employ Americans. And the big problem there is that all those Canadians who used to work at that fertilizer plant are now completely out of work, not just paying a little bit of an extra cost because of the carbon tax, but the main cause of them being out of work is that huge carbon tax that Carney wants to charge on those businesses.
Okay, so let me jump back in and let me just summarize. Okay, so there is actually three really huge costs that arise from this industrial carbon tax. Number one, as Simmer pointed out, an industrial carbon tax on business is a carbon tax on Canadian consumers that makes life more expensive. Number two is that economic element that Gage really drove home, right? So essentially, there's three possible scenarios of when a government hammers a business with a carbon tax, like the industrial carbon tax. Okay. Number one, the business passes on the cost to consumers through higher prices. Number two, business is in Canada cut back production here in Canada and increase production in one of the many countries that don't have a carbon tax, including the United States. And when businesses cut back production, what does that mean for you? It means you or your neighbors or all Canadian workers have fewer jobs. And number three, the other possibility is the worst of all worlds, which is just a combination of both, right? Higher prices and less jobs, right? So the problem with industrial carbon taxes, I mean, not to mention they don't work, they don't actually help the environment, but the economic problem is number one, increased price, number two, cut back production and jobs, and number three, a combination of both, higher prices, fewer jobs. Now, I also want to bring in another element. Maybe Chris, you can go into this, but an industrial carbon tax, because it is sneaky, it's easier for future politicians and future governments to increase it without Canadians, knowing it directly like they do with the consumer carbon tax.
For sure. I just wanted to really highlight what you guys said there very well in your economic way that you do it. With the idea of jobs and factories going south, folks, picture US President Donald Trump, okay, in the Oval Office. He's trying to get factories, employers, manufacturers to come to America, make the Rust Belt chrome again. Like, picture him on the phone. Imagine Canada jacking up its industrial carbon tax on our job creators and on our big businesses like this. He'd be laughing all the way to the deal table. He'd be on the phone with those guys in a second saying, "Hey, can I help you pack? Set up shop in Ohio. Come to Pennsylvania, where we aren't going to be nuking you guys with an industrial carbon tax." So, folks, if you want to stand up to US President Donald Trump, who's trying to lure our jobs and manufacturers south, maybe don't nail our own businesses with a huge Canadian industrial carbon tax. It's really a no-brainer. So when it comes to things like hiding this carbon tax, I think this part's really important here. And I want to zero in on the Liberal leadership frontrunner, Mark Carney, okay? So when he says he didn't say consumer-facing because he was more careful than that, he said consumer carbon tax. When he moves the consumer carbon tax out of your view so you can't see it and just buries it in the industrial carbon tax, you are still paying it. He is still married to a carbon tax. In fact, I would say that a carbon tax or carbon taxes are really a keystone to his worldview. Here's some evidence. This is a recent clip of Liberal leadership candidate Mark Carney speaking to folks in Kelowna. Thank you so much to Castanet for this video. And he makes it clear he's not going to axe the carbon tax. Big laughs. He's going to change the carbon tax. Listen to this.
So the issue wasn't, to coin a phrase, whether to axe the tax. The issue was how to change it. How to change it in all its respects. Because the easiest thing is just to literally axe the tax.
Yeah.
So in changing the carbon tax, what we put out 10 days or so ago, 2 weeks ago, we're making the large companies pay for everybody, including here in Kelowna across BC, if you want it, and it's your choice.
Yeah, well, there you have it, folks. There it is, right? He's not going to scrap the carbon tax. He's going to change it. He's going to hide it. But a carbon tax on business is a carbon tax on you. Now, that's one evidence to really prove that Carney isn't going to scrap the carbon tax. He wants to change it. But Gage, like, I know you've been following his economic work for a long time. You're a brainy geek like I am, maybe even more. So Gage, like, give us some more examples. I know you've been following what Carney has written for years, right? He's been in the public's eye for a long time. So we can say what we can see what he has said and written. So Gage, what other evidence do we have here of Carney's position on carbon taxes?
Yeah, for sure. So Carney wrote a really big book called Values back in 2021 that I decided to read as a much more chipper grad student. We went through it, and me and Sir went back through it and saw some quotes about what Carney thought about carbon taxes at that time. And he's really quite clear. So one of the first things he says is that the Canadian federal carbon pricing framework is a model for others. That's talking about Justin Trudeau's carbon taxes. And then he says one of the most important initiatives to combat climate change is carbon pricing. And then right at the end, he says carbon prices should increase in a gradual and predictable way. So those are things that he said in his book about how he thinks a carbon tax should operate. And the key thing there to highlight is that he wants a carbon tax and he wants it to go up. And that means more expensive for you and me.
Exactly. So if I may jump in, I haven't read the entire thing, but I've read all the chapters that relate to the carbon tax. And folks might remember Carney's announcement in Halifax. And this is key. I'm going to get into the weeds a little bit here. His leadership team, okay, leaked to the national media a day early that he was going to scrap the carbon tax or get rid of it. That was the impression that everybody got. That got headlines for days. But in the nitty-gritty of his actual announcement, that isn't what he said. He said he's going to get rid of the consumer carbon tax, like we've been saying, which means, of course, just shifting it to our employers, to our businesses, okay? And then he got into things like Canadians can figure out a way to earn what I would call green points, okay? Some points that you add up for things like a heat pump or an electric scooter. So keep in mind, this means he's getting rid of the cash rebates. We know that they're paltry. We know that not everybody gets them. But right now, at least it's cash that you do get back in some form of rebate. And you can use that for whatever. Carney doesn't like that. Carney wants to be able to control what you're doing with that form of rebate. So instead, he wants to replace it with a points system, very similar to what the former leader of the opposition, Erin O'Toole, proposed before he got knocked out of his political career. Now, again, going back to this book as evidence, he talks a lot about carrots and sticks when it comes to the carbon tax, when it comes to modifying behavior. And part of that element and how he measures it is in something he calls personal carbon emissions budgets. I'm going to quote it to you here, okay? To limit temperature increases to 1.5 degrees Celsius, the average global citizen born today will have a personal carbon emissions budget over their lifetime equivalent to 1/8 of that of their grandparents. In normal people talk, that means that all of us in our generations now, in his mind, will have to drastically reduce our use of oil and gas to the point of 1/8 of our grandparents. This is the carrot and stick mechanism that he's constantly talking about, and it ties directly back into the fact that he's married to carbon taxes. He's just going to hide them in the industrial carbon tax.
Yeah, I think there's ample evidence of what he's written in the past and also just what he said during the Liberal leadership race that Carney's not scrapping the carbon tax. He's changing it. He's going to try to hide it through the industrial carbon tax on business. And just to recap, like the three reasons that an industrial carbon tax, especially now, is so damaging. Number one, Canadians can't afford carbon taxes. OK, and an industrial carbon tax is a carbon tax on Canadians that makes life more expensive. A carbon tax is a carbon tax is a carbon tax. Canadians don't support the carbon tax. Canadians want all carbon taxes gone, including a sneaky, hidden industrial carbon tax that makes life more expensive. Number two, especially given the international context, right? Especially with a tariff threat over our head, we have to be doing everything in our power to make Canada the most competitive place on earth to work, live, grow business, and attract investment. And that means we have to stop punishing our economy with these damaging carbon taxes that blew a $12 billion hole in our economy last year. Okay, so especially with Trump trying to take our businesses and our jobs, we can't help him. And that means we can't have carbon taxes, okay? And number three, this industrial carbon tax, it's very hidden, it's not transparent, and that makes it easier for politicians to continue to drain the wealth from Canadians, workers, and businesses. And you know, I say it's so non-transparent because Carney hasn't been willing to give a credible or clear answer to the most important question on affordability, and that's this. How much will your carbon tax cost Canadians? We haven't heard anything from Carney on that very important question. Now, folks, we could probably talk about carbon taxes for the next 3 months straight, but there's other stuff that's coming out of Ottawa, and this one is extremely important, and it has to do about the funding, the taxpayer funding of everyone's favorite state broadcaster, the CBC. Chris, what's going on?
Yeah, so I listened to the Heritage Minister do her big announcement. Okay, so folks might remember a little while ago, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation went to Ottawa and we testified at the Heritage Committee. We were some of, I would guess, around 100 or so witnesses that presented to the Heritage Committee on what to do with the CBC. They didn't listen, to put it mildly, because we said that we want the CBC defunded because it's a huge waste of money. Next to nobody is watching this thing anymore. And it's a conflict of interest for journalists to be paid by the government. Needless to say, Heritage Minister had her earmuffs on that day. She wasn't listening. So she came out with this huge proposal yesterday that I could even hear some of the shock in the voices of the parliamentary press gallery. She said, you know how the CBC is costing us $1.4 billion this year? Hold my beer. Let's increase it to about $2.5 billion per year. Yes. So she wants the CBC to get about $2.5 billion per year just from you, the taxpayer. To put that kind of money into perspective, that kind of money could cover the grocery bills of more than 150,000 Canadian families for a year. It is just a sickening amount of money. And so that was one part, Franco. I don't know, like, I'm sure you watched it. The other part, and I hope you can explain this better than I can, it sounded like the Heritage Minister doesn't like the fact that we can kind of see how much the CBC is costing us right now pretty easily in some budget documents published by the government. She doesn't like that. And from what I understood from her, she wants to kind of hide that a bit and bake it into legislation permanently. Can you explain that element to me? Because you did it well yesterday on the phone.
Yeah, so this is the cost of taxpayers is gross. The tone deafness of this announcement was gross. After backlash from Canadians of all political stripes about how the CBC is wasting our money for years, after all this backlash, what's the government's solution? Oh, let's just waste more money. Let's just give the CBC more bigger buckets of taxpayer cash, nearly doubling the cost of taxpayers. But perhaps the most grotesque part of that whole announcement is how the minister is proposing to change the funding of the state broadcaster. Because instead of the funding going through the normal budgeting process, right, you know, the federal government writes a budget, they say this is how much we're going to spend on all these different areas, and then members of parliament, the people we elect to represent, they then vote on that spending every year. Right. So that's how it normally goes. So they want to change the CBC's funding to remove it from that normal budgeting process where there's at least the shred of accountability and transparency where members of parliament vote on it. They want to change that and instead bake the annual funding of the CBC into legislation so that every year the CBC gets a certain amount of tax dollars taken from Canadians, yet members of parliament aren't voting on it. Right? So completely trying to duck accountability, reduces transparency. It's completely bonkers. It's like, that's underselling it. What they're doing is wrong. They yeah. shouldn't be giving the CBC more money in the first place, but then to duck accountability by taking the funding of the CBC out of the normal budgeting process so that MPs are not voting on it every single year is just completely wrong. And not to mention, I heard the minister say something like, you know, her rationale is, well, we want to depoliticize funding around the CBC. Huh? The only reason we have members of parliament is for them to represent the people and to vote on spending and tax increases. Like, if members of parliament aren't voting on huge spending items, then what the heck are we doing paying them six-figure salaries? Like, yeah, this is nuts.
Yeah. And I'll riff off that. Gage, I don't know if you want to jump in here or not. Feel free to interrupt if you feel like it, because it was an outrageous announcement. To your point exactly, Franco, where she said in one, I was watching the whole thing. She basically said in one breath, we need to depoliticize this about the funding of the CBC. Then she turned around and said, if you want to defund the CBC, as she put it, destroy the public broadcaster. If you want to defund the CBC, you can't say you love Canada. Excuse me? What? Talk about ramping up the politicization of the funding of the CBC. I'll speak for myself here. I love Canada, okay? Both sides of my family fought and died in the wars. They have pioneered this country, and some of them are still putting it on the line today to help their communities. So I will take no lessons from a cabinet minister, to your point, Franco, who's paid $300,000 per year. Per year to produce reports like this that say things like, let's amp up the funding for the CBC, let's try to hide it from accountability. Oh, and this was the extra bonus cherry. I don't know if you guys caught this. She was really vague and weird about it, but she wants the CBC or an entity like it to be the fact checkers for information for Canadians, to decide whether or not this is disinformation or propaganda that we're all getting online. Like, it was a very highly charged political announcement yesterday. What got me is that she didn't even address the bonuses. Like, the disgusting multi-million dollar bonuses, to your point, Franco, that all parties, frankly, were surprised by. To the fact that friends of the Canadian Broadcasting, which is basically a cheerleading group for the CBC, they said these bonuses are unbefitting, which means bad, of a public broadcaster. They were mad about it. So yeah, we saw zero accountability or contrition coming from this minister yesterday, and a whole lot of just give us more money, shut up, and don't look at it.
Well, Sarah, I think a good question on there to kind of add to two things. You mentioned that they want to be fact checkers and they're getting all these bonuses, but you called me the other day and were telling me about how no one's watching the CBC.
Yeah.
So do you have that stat on hand? I think that's an important question, because then what are they getting these bonuses for if no one's watching? And what's the point of fact-checking something if no one's going to look at your fact-check?
Great point. So broadcasters, they live off of ratings books, okay? Usually there's a fall book and a spring book, generally speaking, that they really look at. And typically, this is so they can set their advertising rates. Okay, this is how they can say, we get this many eyeballs per hour, give us money for your soap commercial. Okay, the CBC, as of right now, has to also report its viewership. And in its own latest quarterly report, CBC News Network has a primetime audience share of 1.7. 1.7. That is dismal. Okay, put another way, about 98% of Canadians who have a TV and are able to watch TV are choosing to watch other things other than the CBC. If I want to get into supper hour news broadcasts of the CBC, it just falls off a cliff. The numbers of people who are watching the 6 o'clock news on CBC are so small, it's actually almost impossible to measure. So here we have, costing a ton of money, next to nobody watches the thing, and it's an obvious conflict of interest to have journalists on government payroll. They listened to none of that and then put forward this crazy proposal.
Yeah, the government essentially wants the government to be fact checkers, right? The CBC is the state broadcaster.
Yeah.
Because the government hates competition, right? Because the government is getting fact checked left, right, and center, and they can't have that. So, hey, the government hates competition. Let's get the CBC to do it. And you know where the CBC should start the fact checking? on itself, right? Like we were talking about the CBC bonuses. One of my favorite, and well, my favorite because it really boils my blood, is when the former CBC president, Catherine Tate, when she claimed that the CBC doesn't hand out bonuses, yet the documents that the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, Ryan Thorpe right behind me here, dug up, the CBC's own documents showed that the CBC was handing out bonuses. It even called it a bonus. The like CBC's own documents.
Like the word was written out. B-O-N.
Yeah. B-O-N-U-S, bonus, right? And Tate had the audacity to say they don't hand out bonuses, yet their own government documents that the Canadian Taxpayers Federation dug up showed that they do, in fact, hand out a bonus, right? Okay, now with that, we could, again, just like with carbon taxes, we can go on all day. But of course, we have a lot of tax fighting to do. So let's wrap it up. Let's move on to the taxpayer pro tip. Gage, why don't you kick things off?
Well, I think the important one is to get back to what we were talking about before, is that Carney hasn't told taxpayers what his carbon tax is going to cost. But we know that an industrial carbon tax costs Canadians. We know that in the past, Carney has talked about how much he likes carbon taxes and how the prices should increase. So while Carney hasn't given taxpayers a clear answer on what it would cost, all taxpayers know and we know that the cost isn't going to be zero. And that means he's not scrapping the carbon tax, but continue to charge it on taxpayers.
Yes, sir. How much does your carbon tax cost us? That's the question you have to answer if you want a shred of credibility on the most important affordability question. Samber, what's yours?
It's back to the CBC, and this is going to sound funny to bring it up again, but right now, folks have to understand, Parliament, or at least politics in Ottawa, I imagine right now, Franco, is like a hornet's nest, okay, or a busy anthill. Everybody can sense that Parliament will be coming back in a month or so. We're probably going to be going into an election, we think. Okay, so this means all these members of Parliament who want to run again are worried for their jobs. And so all these parties are writing their election platforms right now. And on the CBC, if you want to defund the CBC, meaning go into what used to be the budget line item, $1.4 billion for the whole enchilada. We're not just talking about CBC television in English, by the way. All of it. Every nickel of taxpayers' money. If you want that gone, phone your MP right now. Email them right now. Tell them this is an election issue for me. I want you to scrap every little bit of taxpayer funding for the state broadcaster, period. Because right now, these politicians are all ears. Okay, quite often they can kind of ignore you for 3.5 years, but they're paying close attention right now because their jobs are on the line. So taxpayer pro tip, okay, pick up the phone, send an email, double up on it, contact your MP, and you say, scrap this thing.
Love it. My taxpayer pro tip is going to go to the gang of 338 of them here in Ottawa. Okay, all parties. We've talked a lot about the carbon tax. We talked a lot about the CBC. And, you know, everyone knows that the carbon tax goes up every April 1, right? It goes up. And by the way, the carbon tax is still scheduled to go up April 1 of this year.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know what else goes up April 1 of every year? Members of Parliament pay. Every April 1, when they take more money out of your pocket, they pad more money into theirs with a pay raise. And this year seems no different. So we crunch the numbers and all MPs are going to get another raise ranging between an extra $7,900 all the way up to an extra $15,800. And so after April 1 pay raise, a backbench member of Parliament, along with collecting dust in the House of Commons, will be collecting a salary of $211,000, three times more than what the average Canadian worker makes. A minister's salary after April 1 pay raise will be about $311,000. Okay. So yeah, a lot more than what the average Canadian makes. And the prime minister's salary will jump up to about $422,000.
$422,000?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's 100%. Disgusting.
Yeah. Nearly six times more than what the average Canadian worker makes. Now, okay, look, the tax per pro tip goes out to all 338 of them because this is going to be their sixth pay raise since the beginning of 2020, April 1, their sixth pay raise. So Canadians have gone through pandemic, government-forced lockdowns. Many people lost their jobs. Many people lost their businesses, some for good. Then there was the inflation crisis, a house of living crisis. None of that stopped any member of parliament from any of the parties from stopping the pay raises. And yes, they can stop the pay raises. The Harper government did between 2010 and 2013. So it's not rocket science, folks. Yet all of the parties, all of the MPs essentially shrugged their shoulders, didn't want to make a stink about it. They all got in line at the trough to slop up more of your money. Okay. And as Chris mentioned, though, this year is a little different because now they got to sing for their supper during the election. So my pro tip goes out to all 338 MPs, or how many there are now hanging around the House of Commons, goes out to all political parties, every single one of them. If you want to be a true champion for the taxpayer, you've got to make a stink campaign and promise to end these automatic pay raises you give yourselves every single year. You want to be a true champion of the taxpayer? What's the old saying? Put your money where your mouth is. Stop the MP pay raise. All right, folks, with that, we are going to wrap it up. Thank you, Gage. Thank you, Simmer. And most importantly, thank you, everyone who's watching or listening. Thank you for fighting us. Let's keep up the fight and let's win this thing.